Live from Mr. Body's Mansion, this is Derailed Trains of Thought. Okay, Tim, well, this is maybe better than the bathhouse, but it's kind of spooky. There's a storm, there's at least one dead body.
At least, and I mean, the house is nice. It's a beautiful mansion.
Yeah, it's not a bad house per se, but the people here are a little weird.
Yeah, I feel like there's disaster waiting to happen.
Yeah, I just heard a scream somewhere.
Oh, that's not good.
No.
It was a dark and stormy night. Yeah. We should have known better than to answer that sort of invitation.
Yeah, I don't.
But anyway, the butler seems like a nice guy.
The butler's stand-up guy.
Yeah, stand-up guy.
Yeah, at least. Now that Mrs. Peacock lady, I don't know. But
anyway, welcome, folks.
Hi, so we're back.
Yay!
Episode 49.
Mm-hmm. And this is Tim.
And this is Nick.
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Just fine.
How are you doing, audience?
You survived the Apple Festival.
I did survive the Apple Festival, and then I survived the Sawdust Days.
Sawdust Days?
Yeah, that's the big, the weekend after Apple Festival. Rental has this big, giant sale where we sell bazillions of things. Normally, I don't help. They need the help this year, so I was there running the counter and stuff Friday and Saturday.
Oh, okay. So,
enjoyable, but, you know, another 2 days of, like, craziness.
Gotcha.
So
you're just now kind of getting caught up.
Going back into some sort of normal routine. Outside the trips to random places like bathhouses and mansions.
Yeah.
But my Thursdays are always very interesting.
That's just our life.
Like, Natasha, I'll be home in a bit. I don't know where I'm going or when I'm coming back.
So, yes. Yeah, that one time you came in drenched in, like, all kinds of weird alien stuff.
Oh, I know.
It's
she puts up with quite a lot.
Yes,
so.
Yes, she does.
So. All right. Well, should we go into our story school?
Sounds good to me.
All right. So today we are tackling the topic of revisions. There was actually a reason we picked this topic for our episode. Possibly unbeknownst to most of you, episode 48 was recorded twice.
Da, da, da. Yeah, yeah. We actually had a mistake.
Some audio error.
A big audio error with the previous recording, which was really unfortunate because it meant we had to go back to that bathhouse and do
again,
a lot of
again. Yeah.
Which was really hard.
My hands still have not recovered. Calluses everywhere.
Sheesh. Man, I tell you, Yubaba is a slave driver.
She is.
Good thing we were able to remember our names.
Yes.
Anyway.
So, and you know, that kind of reminds me, the kind of the worst fear writers have, I think, is to lose everything they've been working on. Mm. You know, you hear those stories of people like they wrote their whole first draft and they got it's caught in a fire or something or hard drive wiped out. And you're like, you can't recreate something in the same way. Mm-hmm. I mean, you might have the same sort of. The story's going to be different. You're a different place. You're a different writer, you know. So it's just interesting. I mean, that's one of the things that no one ever wants to, you know, because our beauty talk was different the second time. I mean, you guys might not know that, but there were some things were the same and some things were completely different.
Yeah. Well, and some good, some bad. I mean, we were able to bring up some things that we had forgotten to bring up in the previous recording. I'm sure we probably forgot some things that had been in the previous one.
So I'll start with the usefulness of revisions. Obviously, you don't want to have a forced revision. And, you know, no one loves losing things. So you go and make copies and, you know, it's much nicer with computers now and the cloud and stuff like that. But when I was teaching middle school, I would tell them everything we do outside of, like, you know, little tiny things, we're revising. We revise everything. You do a first draft, I grade it. You do a second draft, that replaces your first grade, you know. But I think it was important to teach them. Very, very seldom is the first thing you write the best version of what you're writing. Mm-hmm. Now, it might be relatively close. And, you know, some of the students were, you know, their first draft was, I changed a couple things. They, hey, why didn't you add this just because they don't know what else to say? And they fix it. And then some people are like, you missed an entire paragraph. This makes no sense. Learn how to spell the, you know, that sort of thing. T-E-H does not count. So.
Yeah, when I taught a college class, I often wondered, certain students, you figured you were getting their very first draft when I did not have that sort of requirement. You were expecting a final draft, and you didn't figure they ever had more than one.
They were done right before the class started.
Yeah, basically.
Which we've all know of. But, but I think the process revision, though, is probably individual to certain. I mean, you got the grammar and stuff like that from a writing point of view. From film, I'm sure it's different, but you don't have grammar. But I guess I'll just start with my personal, and then we'll throw your personal in, and then we'll kind of try to generalize.
Since I have been writing recently, well, we can tackle the writing the and then we'll go to the film stuff.
But, you know, I tend to write my thing, and I'm getting better at that whole writing without editing as you write. Not great yet. But I found, especially if I can push forward and get through the first couple of pages I've mentioned before, the first couple of pages usually change the most. Because the story develops after I get through a few couple of pages and I have to go retcon myself.
But it's not retconning if the draft's
finished. Exactly. That's the nice thing about writing opposed to other medium.
Yes,
that you have a lot of time, a lot of freedom, as opposed to TV or film, where there's usually a little tighter time.
Yeah, you're under the wire, and
at least, I mean, there's some writing that's under wire. And when I did newspaper writing, you know, you just throw it out and make sure it makes some sense, and you're done. Like when I had to type like 5 stories in like 2 hours or something like that. But normally, then the second time through, I'm trying to, you know, make sure everything connects. Read through lines, saying that doesn't mean what I thought it meant, or I use that word like 4 times in this paragraph, which is a thing I do all the time. That's one of my biggest things I have to catch myself, is not to repeat the same word. But I think trying to make sure the story melds. And my other big thing in revision is trying to make sure it's going to make sense to people outside of me. Because many times, especially, I just wrote a short story recently. Many times, especially in short stories, I tend to compress pretty tightly and, you know, and sometimes play with ambiguity and stuff. You want to make sure that it's coming across. I don't necessarily like to state things straight out, especially in short stories. Tim's laughing because, but that's always been my problem. Even in high school, I remember people reading like, this is making sense, but I'm like, but it's here and here. Like, oh, I guess I should explain that more. That's my hardest thing with revision, and what I need people like Natasha and other who reads all my stuff, and anyone else reads, is like, does this make sense? I know what I'm saying, but is it actually saying that?
And you do have a knack of, you're very good at the art of implication, and since sometimes too much.
No, I've learned to recognize that's my blind spot. And I think for revision, that's your biggest thing. Figure out, what is your blind spot? What do you tend to miss? And normally, obviously, you can do so much, a certain amount yourself. Like, oh, I think this should be phrased better, my character here. But I think outside eyes are necessary, and I probably don't get enough of.
I'll just throw in a little bit here with my recent, obviously, Nick has a much wider body of work behind his writing experiences. And I can certainly empathize with a lot of those things. I mean, the whole not editing as you write is something that I've always struggled with for a long time.
And I'm not great at it yet. And normally, my last draft is usually not that far off. I don't know whether it's just I write slow enough that there's not massive changes, or whether I'm just not, I still edit a lot.
Well, I do feel some comfort. I think I've heard Lewis was very similar that way. Like, I guess when he wrote Chronicles of Narnia, his drafts didn't really change all that much afterwards. I mean, he wrote it out, and that was pretty much the way it went.
And I think that's a way to do it. It just takes a lot more time early on and less later.
Yeah. Being really thoughtful about what you're putting down on the paper or on the screen or whatever. And the downside of that is it can make the whole process take longer because it takes that much longer to get your first chapter, your first paragraphs out. I mean, and that does help later on when you're revising. It's not quite as much to do. But then one thing I noticed, because like when I was doing New World's Rising and Natasha was editing my stuff, when you're first starting off, you're like, okay, yeah, that's a good point, and then I'll do that. And then, like, the longer it goes, you'd be like, I don't really want to add more description here. It's like,
but isn't this good enough?
And then the funny thing is, what I found is I would find little ways to include just enough description. Like, okay, so if I include a little bit here, okay, that establishes time of day, and then I'll add a little bit here and a little bit here. Okay, so that's and it usually didn't wind up being that big of a. It's not like I usually there were a couple places, but for the most part, I didn't have to like add you know, even entire sentences or paragraphs or anything. It was really just a few words here and there that kind of help clarify, set the mood, set the setting a little bit more. If I have a blind spot, which I probably do, it might be with, I almost certainly have some sort of blind spot. I may not even be aware of it yet. but one of them is probably descriptions. My goal is more, I want to keep the story moving, mm-hmm. keep the characters moving and all that kind of stuff. And I don't really spend a whole lot of time really that concerned with how everything looks or anything like that.
I think, well, and I'm not a particularly descriptive writer myself most times, at least not like exteriors. But the other thing I think I always try to pay attention to when I'm revising, and this is more for fiction, obviously, than like nonfiction and other things. And I always feel like I do horrible, and I don't have a good sense of how other people read it, is pacing. I always feel like when I'm writing it, it's taking a long time. And then when I reread it, I'm like, it took like three sentences. Why is it over already? But then you're like, but if I add more, it'll just seem redundant because...
Yeah.
And so I never know, is this getting across what I meant in the same depth I meant it? Or is it just sort of... And it's that weird... Because revision at that level of communicating clearly what was in your head. Obviously, the grammar is part of that, so they can read and the punctuation, you know, it... Try, you know, there's so much stuff in your head and so many emotions or things you're trying to communicate or actions or whatever. And then is it coming through in the writing? Is that what everyone else is getting? Mm. And that discrepancy between what you see and what the paper says, I think in some ways is what the revision is about.
Well, and that's why you have to take a step away from it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it helps to like come do your revisions a day or two after you've been writing.
I always try to, you know, take a couple day break. I think it would be really beneficial. I heard, I was telling Tim this before the podcast. Apparently, two things about F. Scott Fitzgerald's Great Gatsby. I've heard, and I don't know if this one's true or not, that his editor made him cut the first 70 pages of it. Which, you know, it's one of those things, as a writer, you think this is important, then someone convinces you, no, wait, this is not, you know, this is, you can do without this.
Yeah.
And then also, I guess he was fighting for the title. I don't know it exactly what it was. Something along the lines of Tumultuo in the West Egg, you know. And
I think it should have been that, honestly.
And the editor's like, people won't get the allusion. I don't know what the allusion to Tumultuo is, and the West Egg just sounds weird. If you read the book, it's a location, or it might be East Egg. I don't remember, but it's one of those things that really good editors, and you know, I don't know. My wife's my main editor. You know, I haven't had really, you know, really critical error. The sort of editor that comes alongside you say, not just because you don't want an editor that tries to make the book what they think it should be. Mm-hmm. You want an editor that comes along and tries to make it what you're trying to make it be. Mm. You know, and that will communicate to the right. You know, and can see the tough things that you're like, but I don't want, I love this character. And you can say, look, the character doesn't do anything. You know, it's funny, but let's cut it.
Right.
Which I heard actually. Apparently, I don't know all the, but I guess Frozen went through a massive number of revisions.
Yeah. I think that movie was in various stages of development for a long, long, long time.
But someone...
I feel like I even heard that they were trying to do an adaptation of, you know, the original fairy tale, like all the way back while Walt Disney was still alive. So that's been kicked around the Disney studios for quite a while.
Well, and then John Carter was tried numerous times.
In development hell, as they say.
Someone was saying that Olaf is almost an unnecessary character.
Mm-hmm.
But because there's something, and it's been a while since I've seen the film, something he does at the end that they thought solidified the fact that he was necessary to the movie.
Mm.
You know, so, you know, they were thinking about that sort of stuff.
Okay, yeah.
You know, because he's fun, but for a lot of the movie, he's just kind of the comic
relief, and there's plenty of other comedy, so...
But at the end, he does some important stuff and talking to Anna, and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true. Speaking of important, unimportant characters, I mean, we were talking before this, too, about my book, New World's Rising. It's funny, looking at the outline, I only wrote about half of the outline. Like, it's eight chapters long, but those eight chapters were originally four chapters in the... outline, and it changed and flux. Some got much bigger, and I made one fight scene a much bigger battle than it had been originally because I knew I was going to shorten the whole thing. But really, all the important stuff was in that first four chapters, and the second half was more to kind of move all the characters forward and establish their organization a bit more. But it was also mainly to, like, introduce more characters. And there are characters that we like and hope to see in future books, but
for that story, we're not really...
For that story, it wasn't as necessary. Yeah. And it really was able to found, you know, this is actually a pretty decent ending, so...
You know, what's necessary for good revisions is a sense of fluidity to understand that the story is still moving.
Yeah.
This is part of the reason when I have time to, I like to write on paper. Mm-hmm. It feels more free. Then there's this fluidity about it when I type it up, that it can change as I'm typing it up, as opposed to once it's on the computer, I have a harder time moving things, just psychologically.
Even in film, this is why a lot of movies will have advanced screenings for audiences, because they just to see how audiences will react to certain things. I mean, movies are such a highly budgeted, expensive medium anyway, that you have, in order to be successful, you can't just rely on the directors, you know, even if your director is Jim Henson or you know, someone brilliant. Like, you have to be able to play it for an audience. And sometimes audience reactions are not always great the first time. And it may just be a little thing that will help a lot. Or, I mean, it's possible to have just the wrong audience.
But. I remember you were telling me, what was that last student film you did at Regent?
Oh, the big one?
With the cupcakes.
Yeah, a piece of cake.
You told me that one scene where... about some double taking, you had come back, you had added it in a second time to expand the...
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's just one of those things that, like, a couple extra seconds or something changed the whole feeling of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the movies seem to, I mean, are even more emotionally... We react more intuitively in many ways to a movie than to a book.
Yeah, there's things that you won't even discover about the movie until you're in the editing room and... doing that, man. Talking about piece of cake, you know, because that was my big project in the early days of this podcast.
Oh yeah,
you heard a lot of project updates. Some of you longtime listeners, I'm sorry about piece of cake, but that was definitely one that I did my first cut of it. Then I met up with a director, and then we went through it and we found things to trim, and you know, we talked things over and found things to trim, and then we thought we had a pretty good cut, and then we showed it to our faculty producer. Now, after that, we went through several weeks. We thought we were almost done. We went through several weeks of working with him to hone it down and hone it down and hone it down. I think we wound up cutting like 2 minutes or something out of it. And honestly, I don't remember what we cut. I think it was just tightening things and just being, you know, merciless, like making sure the story had enough room to breathe and do what it was supposed to do, because comedy needs room to breathe. But it needs just the right amount of room to breathe.
Comedy especially is timing.
Yeah, it's all about timing. So, I mean, that was certainly an eye-opening experience because, again, I'm the kind of guy that's like, okay, I finished it. I think it's done. Let's just move on to the next thing. But there's definitely some value to being willing to go at it again and again and again.
Yeah, I think that's one experience I have not had much of, and I wish I don't know if I would enjoy it, but I think it would be beneficial for me in my writing, especially my long stuff, to have one of those, you know, like a F. Scott Fitzgerald editor who's just kind of brutal. I probably wouldn't like it, probably complain like, no, this is important for this reason, and have excuses. But, I mean, but at least if you're battling out, you defend things, or you come like, oh, okay, I guess that's... Mm-hmm. Well, it was interesting. The little bit that happened on Unremarkable Squire is that my first chapter had this little section before, kind of like previously, you know, like the historians write about this and this and this and this. And she's like, look, this is not important. Put it in prologue, you know, if you want it. I'm like, okay, I can do that. It's not a big deal. And I don't remember if it stayed that way or not, because then later on there were issues with the first chapter making sense about references to historians, because they had connected, and so I don't remember exactly how it panned out. I also remember reading back when Phantom Menace came out, George Lucas talking about he loved put the movie came together in the editing room. You know, I think he would just film stuff, and then work at it for ages, because he loved the editing,
right?
Probably more than the directing.
Yeah, no, I believe that George Lucas is definitely a tinkerer.
Yeah, yes.
Talk about someone who probably likes to revise a little too much.
And that's true, because some people's revision, I think Tolkien like that, I know some of my writing friends, they just want to keep rewriting it and keep rewriting, keep tweaking, keep adding this, doing this, and it's never done. And at some point, at least for me, I'm the sort of person, this is pretty good. I've always been like, the first 98% is fine, and then the last 2% takes, you know, twice as long as the first 98%. At some point, you just, I'm moving on, trying something new.
What's that old creative person saying that a work of art is never finished. You just have to come to a stopping place.
Yeah. Yeah. And some people have a lot more trouble with that than I do.
Sure.
Well, I do tend to keep tweaking it before trying to post it for people to a certain extent. But
you still put it out there. I mean, yeah. I mean, there are... You could look at it either way. I mean, it's, for some people, it may be a matter of pride, a matter of, like, this has to be absolutely perfect, because if it's not perfect, that means I am at fault in this.
Yeah.
Like, look, no work of art is perfection in itself.
Yeah.
Well, maybe Lord of the Rings. Okay, I tongue in cheek. But,
I kid.
But we're all infallible people, and every work of art is going to be...
We're all infallible people?
We're all fallible.
That's my entire world.
No, we all make mistakes, case in point. and so, obviously, no work of art is going to be perfect either. So and we have to accept that.
No, yeah, I accept it. I think art's one of those things where, in many ways, by writing something, throwing it out there, is how you improve. I think it's very hard to improve by working on one thing over and over again.
Oh, yeah.
Some people probably can. I think I've learned more by trying different things. And then some of it sticks and some of it doesn't.
Yeah, everyone has a lot of bad work in them, and they have to get that out. You have to work through that in order to get to the good stuff.
Well, I'm not even convinced. Sometimes people have a good one, and then later on, just all kind of bad stuff. Be they keep trying stuff, and then it's just like, okay, you should have gone back to what you were doing earlier.
It's like, you had that one great story. You should have just stopped.
But, you know, some of the revision, you know, and that's almost another version. Some revision is just the same theme played out in 10 different stories. You know, we like to talk about Miyazaki. You know, it basically has like a couple themes that just keep coming up in various permutations. I mean, they're different stories. Hmm. But it's like the artist sometimes, his whole work is just trying to, I got these, you know, two ideas or one idea. I'm going to just keep trying to find the best way to angle to approach it from for some people.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
No. I mean, a lot of great artists work like that.
Mm-hmm.
They always talk about like the... Notes from the Underground was kind of Dostoevsky's like proto great work, and then after that, all his works were kind of working off the same themes, and they're all great novels now. And
sure,
but that I guess that was his turning point from whatever he used to write before that too.
So definitely a lot of value to going back and not only revisiting ideas, but the revision of them.
Yeah, and spending time and just throwing it out there without any revision. First off, it's just not good craft.
Yeah,
and second off. It's not good for getting your point across many times. I mean, like, the story I just wrote, Malfunction. Yeah, Natasha hadn't read it yet, but I had my mom read it because I was at work and I printed it off. And I was saying, look, does this work? You know, does this make sense? I had revised the ending and the beginning several times already, trying to be like, okay, how does this jive? You know, am I giving enough info? Is it, et cetera? So I think struggling with trying to communicate, like we talked about last episode, we talked about beauty. You know, or truth, or whatever reason you're writing, you want it to come across to people as well as you can manage. And that takes some effort on that point. And, when I work with students, they're always like, I'm done, it's good, isn't it? And, you know, they haven't even spell checked it, you know. You're like, no, there and there and there are not the same. So.
One example that's been kind of, I've been meaning, wanting to make sure I got it out there. I think it was even after one of the early... audience screenings pretty late into the process of making Wall-E, they made an interesting change in that I guess the first time, you know, before they fall down into the trash area,
mm-hmm.
Wall-E gets zapped by the evil robot.
Okay, yeah.
I guess originally it was Eve who was getting zapped, and then there was a bit, Wall-E had this big rescue thing of her, and then and then after the trash scene, she was better and they went on. At some point, they changed it to Wall-E being the one getting zapped. And this, for Andrew Stanton, he said this was important because for the first time, suddenly getting back to Earth, it became about, for Eve, the directive became more about saving Wall-E than it was just about getting the plant. And it didn't change a lot of other things because eventually Wall-E, gets kind of smashed in the one during the scene where they're trying to gain control of the ship.
Yeah,
they're trying to gain control of the ship. So, I mean, there was always going to be that bit of Eve trying to save Wall-E at the end, but by having Wall-E get zapped earlier, it upped the stakes for Eve and basically changed made that whole relationship even stronger and upped the stakes a lot earlier.
Are you the one who told me about the revision in Incredibles, about the fight between Mr. Incredible and his wife? Maybe not. Or did I read that somewhere?
I'm not sure. I've heard that one.
I can't remember the details, but I guess when they first did it, it seemed almost like he was abusing her, like how the language and stuff was. But just by changing how the images were, that she was, you know, elasticating around everywhere, it changed the perception, and everyone's like, oh, you rewrote it. And he's like, no, you just retooled it. I guess I can't remember the details. I must have saw that online somewhere.
Interesting. I've not heard that story.
Okay.
But again, that's like I said, that was pretty late in the process, and it was a subtle change. But subtle things like that really, like, I mean, and I'm sure the story probably would have worked otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's the difference between taking the time to make those subtle differences can make the difference between a decent story and a great one.
Yes. Yes, I agree. All right, that's a good ending point. We'll just stop there.
Yeah,
so
sounds good to me.
All right, then we'll go on to our soundtrack. I kind of stumbled across this one. It's called No Resub. And what that means in Overclock Remix terms is that a lot of times when people submit their music, and Overclock Remix has a pretty high standard of passing things through,
mm-hmm.
and some people complain about that, but a lot of times the judge will say, no, we're not going to pass this, but please resubmit because there's a lot of good ideas, and if you fix this and that is the other thing. So Overclock Remix likes to kind of encourage revisions of stuff that seems to be, you know, working well. And so this is kind of a tongue-in-cheek title called No Resub. It's a remix from Scribblenauts by Protodome. Protodome's awesome normally at like jazzy chiptunes. This is a little more glitchy than that. But I think it's happy and you'll enjoy it. All right, and we're back. Hopefully you enjoyed that. I heard another scream.
Yeah.
It's getting, the dead body is starting to pile up here. So, anyways, let's go and do something completely different then. Okay?
Sounds good to me.
Okay. This is What If. We thought, since we were talking about revisions, that we'd try to tackle some, what if certain things, people had revised their script. You know, you mentioned the Wally thing.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, what if certain important moments had been revised? They said, no, let's not do that. Let's do this. Hmm. And I guess one example in real life is that apparently in Return of the Jedi, we had to bring Star Wars a couple times that episode.
Of course.
Originally, I guess Han Solo was going to die blowing up the Death Star,
mm-hmm.
which is an interesting way to... it's hard for me to envision that, partly because Han Solo has lived on in 10,000 comics and books since then. But also, Return of the Jedi, and it would just change the feeling. Return of the Jedi is such a triumphant film.
Yeah.
I mean, basically, it's two battle scenes right after each other is the whole movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, you know, about underdogs winning. And I think it would really change the feel in a way that I'm not sure what the last of the six movies do feel.
Yeah.
I mean, I get it would have been more realistic. It would have been more like there's, you know, casualties in war, kind of like how J.K. Rowling did in Harry mm-hmm. Potter. You know, bad things happen in war. Yeah. But that doesn't seem to be fit the vibe of the first of the original three Star Wars movies.
Yeah. No, I think it would have been a big change to, yeah, obviously Return of the Jedi, because, yeah, there's nothing else really in that movie that feels like that would fit. In my opinion, Empire Strikes Back, you've got a lot of dark stuff going on. And it makes sense that the good guys barely escape at the end. That's kind of the theme of that movie. Return of the Jedi is supposed to be kind of wrapping everything up. So you wouldn't want to have this one last tragedy.
And then you would rescue Han at the beginning and then have him die. I guess.
Yeah,
I
mean, that's really weird.
You would have had to rewritten his plot line substantially. I mean, you could have had him rescue, but you would have set this foreboding or something in it to make it make mm-hmm. any sense.
Yeah. I mean, it would make a lot more sense, and I half think they're going to do this. It would make a lot more sense to kill Han Solo in the next Star Wars movie if they're going to do that.
Yeah.
I think people half expect that because they've heard about this story before. But speaking of characters dying, here's another interesting revision. I think we've talked about this before. Jack.
Oh, yeah.
He was originally supposed to die in the first episode of Lost.
Yeah.
And that would have really surprised people.
Now, was Kate supposed to be the lead then?
I think so.
Okay.
I wonder if it would have become more, well, I guess Revolution had the same characters through most of it, didn't it?
Yeah, the main characters, yeah, that's true.
But I wonder if there would be even more of that sort of sense of life is fleeting kind of thing in Lost. I mean, Lost, there was plenty of death in it, I mean, as it was.
For what I understand, the pilot Lost and the whole setup was run at, you know, massive numbers of revision. They were off the cuff, a lot of the early stuff anyways.
Yeah.
So this is hard. I mean, the show would have been, I don't even know what you would say the show would be. It would have been completely different, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I guess you could point to a lot of things like that where the show, if they had done a certain thing differently, how different would the show have been? What if Mr. Echo had stayed around the whole time?
Yeah.
What would the last season even look like if Echo had been around?
It would have been really interesting with Echo still around. Because he was like the third spiritual wheel.
Yeah. So maybe you would have had someone, maybe he might have really been good for Locke, honestly. Because Locke was getting fed all kinds of misinformation.
Constantly.
Yeah, some of it from himself.
He's a really sad character, honestly.
He really is. He had a very tragic end.
Especially when he put in order.
Yeah.
But, you know, he got three seasons that end with him in the coffin, so.
Well, yeah. Two of them are the same coffin.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, but I mean, that's how you end three different seasons, so. other major revisions to, we had some we were throwing around.
Well, I don't know that any of them, the other ones were ones that had actually been
considered. No, this is our what if.
Yeah, now we get into the harebrained.
That we get to do stuff just because.
Well, I did like your one that you mentioned just before. What if Arwen hadn't been in the Lord of the Rings movies? Okay, that's a little mean, because she was kind of barely in them as it was.
Well, and I have this grudge against anything that would change the book substantially, just because, well, I've said it before. If Tolkien didn't put in the main book, why did you put in the main movie? I mean, it just doesn't... That, to me, seems like you're like, oh, wait, we need to make sure there's a girl in here and a romance in order to appeal to certain demographics. That's what it feels like to me.
Yeah.
I mean, not that it was. I mean, it is a story from Tolkien. It is. But he decided to put in the appendix, which to me is an important choice he made. Okay, but that's just me. Other people like it perfectly fine.
And that's not even touching putting appendices of Lord of the Rings into The Hobbit for some reason.
Yeah, we won't. See, now we're not doing a revision. Now we're just me on a soapbox. So, So. Maybe when we have an episode, we'll just call it Peter Jackson and
our soapbox.
But our soapbox. Yeah, we'll just do soapbox things. But yeah, like Peter Jackson. He does a good job in his.
Problem is, people have probably heard us on our soapboxes most times.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, here's another revision. I mentioned Jim Henson earlier and bad audiences reception. I think I've mentioned on here before, but the original cut of Dark Crystal, he tried to have all the Skeksis talk in their own language with no subtitles. Because he's kind of like, you know, this is supposed to be a different world. You know, why have them speak English? And it's all about the visuals anyway. Jim Henson was all about visual stuff over having to have dialogue.
You mean
as
like Terry Gilliam?
You know, I mean, that's phenomena. That's it's all about the abstract. But it didn't fly. And you can understand why.
Yeah. Okay, so let's come up with a harebrained one now, okay?
Okay.
So we'll see. Okay, how about we just start with, we'll just switch. You know, we were, in the news is Ghostbusters is now apparently going to be redone with all girls.
Female cast.
Let's take some character and switch gender on them.
Okay.
I'm trying to bring up something we haven't brought up in other episodes as often.
What about Braveheart? What if we make William Wallace?
So we're talking Joan of Arc now.
Yeah, Joan of Arc. Actually, I'm surprised they haven't done a modern day Joan of Arc thing.
That's true.
You know, like
not that I know of.
Well, I guess part of the problem is that it's hard to have Joan of Arc as a feminist icon when she's getting her instruction, her vision, not from herself, but from God.
Yeah.
So that's part of the problem there. But what would it would have a whole new meaning to the torture scene at the end. It would probably be a little...
even more that would change a lot of kind of your dynamics and everything.
Revisionist history in a really weird way.
I'm glad they didn't do that.
Yeah. Okay, that was a weird one.
Well, because they just made Thor a female, didn't they?
They announced it? I don't remember if it's happened.
Yeah, I don't understand how that's working.
I don't understand that one either. I mean, I get, like, Captain America, because that's just a title.
Yeah.
Like, I can see, I mean, that's like having a Supergirl or what have you. Technically, Supergirl is a separate character, but I can sort of see it. Thor is a little confusing to me. Like, if she just has the power of the hammer, okay, cool. But should her name still be Thor? I don't know enough about the mythology behind the Marvel Thor to really say.
Yeah, interesting. No, I don't know. Okay, let's see. What if? Stranger Than Fiction. What if he had died?
Oh, well, it would have been a much sadder story.
Yeah, and that movie's interesting because it almost admits it's a cheat by making him live.
True. It also suggests though that, well, from a literature perspective, it's a cheat, but. It kind of brings up this idea that perhaps, well, the way she puts it is that the man's life, if he's a good man, is worth more than a work of good literature, which is true.
It is true, yes.
Kind of raises the question. I mean, the fact that he does find out what is going to happen to him and decides to go along with it anyway makes it a different story than it would have been if he had just died normally.
Yeah.
That movie is so meta, it's kind of hard to... It's very hard to dissect without getting wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey.
Timey-wimey. Oh, okay. So here, what if we had a female doctor?
A lot of people want there to be a female doctor soon.
Well, I know, but what would that look like? Well, I'm not sure. I mean, from a logistic point of view, I don't think they should. But I like the idea of
what would it look like. Yeah, because... I'm a little weird. I honestly think they probably will try to do a female doctor at some point because that's the culture we live in now.
Yeah.
I'm not real fond of it because I think that gender is something more intrinsic to who you are than just your DNA.
I concur.
But, okay, so what would it look like? Let's move beyond whether they should and what might it look like.
I mean, for some reason, all I can think of like an eccentric librarian, but that's probably not even right.
Honestly, it would probably look a lot like River Song.
That's, I mean, okay, yeah, that's true. It would probably be all sassy and everything, mm-hmm. like River Song.
And know-it-all and kind of, I mean, the one difference of River Song and the doctor generally is that she never really puts a great, like the doctor knows very distinguished, he's Time Lord, you guys are humans.
Yeah.
River Song, she doesn't really care either way. I mean,
it'd be interesting where they would give the doctor more compassion as a female or where they would try to play kind of the... I mean, abstracted version.
I mean, that's always the trick when it comes to superpowered female characters, and it's never really been. You know, that's one why it's taken so long to have a Wonder Woman movie because no one can really decide on what makes a perfect woman.
Yeah,
people would say some of the best Wonder Woman stories is where she's compassionate and is fights for justice. And that's a really, it's a really tough combo.
Okay, here's a completely off another what if. What if, okay, and I don't know how many of our listeners have watched this movie, but I really enjoyed it. Cloverfield.
Okay.
What if they had lived at the end? Because it's kind of a sad movie. I mean, mm-hmm. It works the way they did it. I mean, you couldn't have ended it better. But you have this monster, and it just... And then they die together. And that's the whole point, that the two characters have been trying to find each other the whole time. They die together, and it was a good day. Mm-hmm. which is a perfect ending. But it's kind of a downer in some ways that, mm-hmm. You know nothing about this monster. They're terrorized all day, and then they die. I mean,
yeah.
It's kind of a, life is short, nasty, and brutal.
It might have been a more uplifting movie. I mean, you could still say it was a good day if they get together and, they survive this thing and maybe they'll live the rest of their
lives. But I guess then the question is, can you have them live and not explain anything about the monster?
I don't see why not, honestly. I mean, the whole thing is found footage anyway. I guess there's a couple ways you could do it. You could do it as if, instead of this being some random found footage, you could be like... After the tape ends, show them like old and showing their grandkids.
Oh.
This is we lived through that great disaster you once heard about.
It would certainly change the entire feel of the movie.
It would.
If you ended like that.
Yeah. It would be sort of like, you could turn it into sort of this like, the human spirit goes on, we survived however, and maybe you could touch somehow on where the thing had come from.
Because I guess that's the interesting thing with some of these revisions is that, especially with deaths, or things like that, that when how you kill a person or you don't kill a person, you either it feels cheap or not, or maybe right or not. You decide: am I trying to be optimistic, or am I trying to be? How can I get away with? Does it feel more true to kill them or more true to keep them alive in some ways? And sometimes you can have stories where you could do either,
yeah.
And they would both fit. And then I don't know how they, like, I never watched Terminator.
Salvation.
But mm-hmm. I think there was one version where he died and one that he lived. And I think even filmed.
I don't remember if they filmed it. I do remember hearing one where basically John Connor got, I'm trying to remember now. I guess not, I was going to say assimilated, but it's not the Borg. But I think what happened was that I remember what it was. It was Cybernet had been trying to create a fake John Connor and then implant him within the
timeline,
the human resistance, and basically wipe them out that way.
So
if they had been able to do that, that probably would have been essentially the end of the humans would have all lost.
Okay,
and
that
so that
kind of sad.
Yeah, that would have been the that would have been the evil ending.
The evil ending.
But yeah, it is interesting how if you. Just by changing certain key things, it can really change the entire movie, the entire meat of the story, in a sense. And I guess, and there have been stories that played with this, if you change, like Run Lola Run kind of plays with this. Like, you change one event at the beginning of a sequence, and it has dire consequences for the rest of the sequence of events.
Well, there's been TV. Well, I watch a little bit of Daybreak, and you keep reliving the same day over and over again, and you do different things and try to break this. Groundhog Day sort of.
Oh, okay.
Thing. Except there's some mystery in that they're trying to solve, and they keep getting new clues every day or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's interesting to I think this is what fan fiction does sometimes.
Yeah.
No, I didn't like this choice. Therefore, here's how I'm going to rewrite it.
Do it this way.
I'm going to do it this way.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I know they've done. I'm sure that there's been fan fictions of like choosing a different, romantic partner.
Yep.
Or what would have happened if Zuko hadn't betrayed his brother at the end of season two? Spoiler alert.
I guess what's interesting though is that we have this, we interact with stories in this way where we feel like we can change them, that the characters live outside the story.
Hmm.
I think that's interesting. I mean, yeah. Myth has always been, myths, there's so many different versions of myths because different people absorb them and do them, and mm-hmm. reinterpret them. And I think that's an interesting thing that, I'm back in my story school. I'm not meaning to be, but, but this act of us trying to rewrite stories, people are constantly doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the sign of a really good story possibly is that you don't see any place you would want to change it.
Hmm. Yeah,
or you could, but you're like, but this version's still better.
That's a good point. I mean, yeah, you can have a lot of different, there's been lots of different Superman stories, a lot of different Spider-Man stories over the years or what have you, but there's really only one definitive Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the movies are good too, but the same, that's the adaptation, that's the Peter Jackson version. we know the original one is the real one.
I'm trying to think of one more good harebrained, really, really good harebrained one.
I know, we went to serious mode.
That doesn't normally happen, what if?
No, not really.
Normally we have Dorothy running around blowing up, you know, Tin Man and stuff.
Probably the closest we had was when we did Tolkien doing
Star Wars. That was way back when.
That was way back. I think that was our first what if.
I think you're right. Okay, we need a crazy what if. Like, what's a movie I've seen recently? See, now I got this whole stuck on, like, people dying or not dying, or whether it's a guy or a girl. And let's try something like, what if? This is not really one, but I always wanted to write an X-Files episode. Like, I always wanted to write one where Mulder was wrong. No, seriously.
Isn't he half the time, though? It's always the weird thing.
It is always the weird thing, from what I remember. I couldn't, some expert, X-Files expert. But I remember Scully would have these ideas, and they might be okay. It's like the most that Listen episode of Doctor Who. Oh,
okay, yeah.
Where, you know, where you just always believe the Doctor. And then finally there's an episode where, like, wait a second.
Maybe he was wrong.
Maybe he was wrong every time. But I don't think there was ever one like that for – and Mulder, I love Mulder. He wasn't always right with the exact answer, but he was always – it was never the normal thing. Mm-hmm. It was always the odd thing.
Yeah.
Which is – it's X-Files. I mean, that's why it is. But I always won one episode –
Not that Scully would always believe it.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes it was really ambiguous. Like, I don't know what it was.
There was something like that on Castle recently. You ever watch Castle?
I haven't, no.
Well, in a lot of episodes, they'll have something where it's he'll come up with some crazy theory for, like, the things the zombie apocalypse is going to. And turns out it's like these zombie impersonators. That's why they had a zombie on the surveillance tape or what have you. Well, then there was one recently where the guy thought that he was being, it seemed like there were some demonic forces at play or something like that. So that's what Castle thinks it is first, and his partner, you know, he's not like, no, it's not. And then later they think, oh, maybe it's an invisible man. His partner's like, no, it's not an invisible man. And it actually is. It actually winds up, like, involving some government cloaking technology and stuff. So it's like the one time where they actually did this really weird sci-fi thing with it instead of just being a normal mystery caper.
That's hilarious.
Okay, that was another complete side tangent. Still not quite in the harebrained.
Not quite harebrained enough. Okay, we're going to do a ridiculous one. So what if... The problem is half the what ifs when revisions, then someone did. Yeah. Like... No, what if we put Pride and Prejudice with zombies? Aha! Drag, beat me to it. Because I think the whole point of creativity is that we take, you know, something that, why don't, you know, and the thing is, we live in the age now where stories are constantly recycled in new ways.
Mm-hmm. Well, like, Star Wars has even done a comic book series where, like, they change one fact in say, A New Hope, and said Luke misses the Death Star, so then they have to deal with that. I'm trying to remember what the Empire Strikes Back one is. Some, like, that one is one that takes place, they do a revision really late in the movie. The Empire Strikes Back one, I feel like it did happen early. I think Luke dies, actually, in the Empire Strikes Back one.
Oh, wow.
And so instead of Luke going to Dagobah, Leia has to go to Dagobah and train to be a Jedi. And then Yoda comes with them to, I think, rescue Han from Cloud City or something.
It's like choose your own adventure. It's like, okay, I'm not going to die from, you know, this random accident on the plane. I'm not going to try to take the boat and still die.
Yeah.
That's choose your own adventure. But
right.
So,
yeah, I mean.
Okay, here we go. Okay, what if, let's cast someone else as Jack Sparrow. Not Johnny Depp. Well, if they, you know, the director's just like, you know what? No, he's doing it.
He's crazy.
You know, like
Jack Black.
Jack Black. Okay, Jack. Okay, so we got Jack Black. Not quite as suave.
Not quite as suave. I think he gets more away with, like, I think it becomes much more of like Keystone Cops type kind of pirate movie.
Okay, I would almost pay to watch it with Jack Black. Like, I'm not sure they get sequels out of it, but like maybe like a little overblown and
yeah, I mean like he's very overblown, obviously, but like he always just kind of manages to scrape by the skin of his teeth, sort
like
of
a lot
thing.
Of physical like comedy,
yeah, a lot stuff. Of pratfalls and a lot of, you know, that kind of stuff.
I almost want to see that.
Instead, I'm pretty sure Will Turner would end up being the heartthrob there instead of Captain Jack.
Yeah. He would be much more the buffoon.
Yeah.
But somehow, because somehow Jack Sparrow is both the buffoon and the suave.
Yeah. It's... I'm not sure anyone else could possibly do it quite like that.
Jack, I like the Jack Black replacement. While we're on that, we'll just put Steve Carell there.
As
Jack Sparrow.
I'm not sure about that one.
You don't want the dry, like...
It's too... I could see Steve Carell doing a very good... who's the British captain?
Oh, okay, yeah.
I could see him doing the British guy.
That'd be kind of awesome.
Whatever his name is.
We'll just recast everyone.
Okay. Let me think here.
Just because no one can tell the difference, put Natalie Portman in for Keira Knightley.
That works. Actually, you know what? I'd like to see Sawyer as Will Turner.
Josh Holloway. That'd be fun.
Can you see him in a pirate movie?
Yeah, I think he'd be a great pirate.
Why not? I mean, he's definitely got the suave thing. He'd probably be a bit better Jack Sparrow, honestly.
Yeah, that's probably true. we'll move in the Jack Sparrow.
Yeah.
Okay, we only need another Turner.
Maybe Jack Black's Will Turner.
Okay, let's do it. You're cast.
Okay.
Okay. Anyone else important?
Barbossa. Yeah, we haven't touched Barbossa.
We need a good...
Mickey Rourke.
Mickey Rourke.
Yeah,
we'll do that. Yeah. Okay.
He'd be a buffer Barbossa, but he'd be like probably like have his you know shirt ripped the entire time.
And we can go with that. Maybe he's the heartthrob now.
Yeah.
not
quite as wide of appeal. I mean, there'd be a certain that'd be really attractive to him. Don't get me wrong. But
all right. So that most of the characters then?
I think so. Yeah,
man, that was a good idea. We should recast people.
that's kind of a loose revision, but I guess, yeah.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah,
it was harebrained.
It was harebrained enough.
Okay, there we go.
We can wrap this up now.
We're going to go. Okay, so we're done.
Yep, I think we're done.
Okay, so let's give us some contact info here, Tim.
Okay, well, let's revise the order we usually do it in. We'll say this time, first, you can listen to us live at mixler.com/derailedtrainsofthought. Or you can email us at derailedtrains@gmail.com, or you can go back to do it the classic way, visit our website, derailedtrainsofthought.blogspot.com.
You can also subscribe to us on both Stitcher and iTunes.
Stitcher, we found out, in case you've been listening to us talk about it and wondering what it is, Stitcher is for people who have Droid phones.
Yes.
Instead of iTunes.
Yeah, so. Yeah.
And also, we've been the reruns.
We're on YouTube, yes.
Yes, the reruns have been continuing on YouTube. You can find us easily there by going to youtube.com/derailedtrainsofthought. Or actually, it might just be just youtube.com/derailedtrains.
I think it is derailedtrains.
Yeah, that sounds right. So, yeah.
All right.
We're lots of places to listen to our stuff.
I hear some gunshots going off in the foyer.
Man. As long as we don't find another
body. I think I heard one, two, and two, and one.
With so many dead bodies around here, you just kind of get, you just kind of tune it out after
a
while.
Yeah, I know.
It's unfortunate.
You have to go with it.
Yeah.
Okay.
For my soundtrack today, I basically just did a Google search for OC Remix for revisions. Again, knowing that some songs they go through some revisions before they get accepted on OC Remix. Took me a while to find one that just really sold me, but this is the one that I went with. It is a relatively new song. Well, the game is not new. It's not a game I'm at all familiar with. It's called Tyrion. No relation to a Game of Thrones character. Or a city in Children of the Wells.
A revised name for a city.
Yeah. We originally called Tyrion, and then we realized...
Like, oh, Game of Thrones! Because none of us watched it, and we're like...
Oh, well, I guess that's kind of important. Anyway, the name of the remix is Data Flux. The name of the remixer is Majelniak, or Majelniak, or something like that. So, yeah, sorry if I got your name wrong, dude, whoever you are.
Come listen to our podcast.
That is Derailed Trains of Thought. Did I just hear a singing telegram?
I think so. I don't know what is going on.
Okay, well, hopefully, folks, we will see you next time, and assuming we're not next.
Yeah. Big one next time.
Yes, the big 5-0.
Yeah. I'm not sure exactly where this podcast will take us, but I'm expecting many surprises.
Yes, many surprises. Hopefully it should be another big epic to do.
Yep.
So, till then.
This has been Nick.
And this is Tim.
Adios.
Bye-bye.